So I'm going to read our preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donation. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine, and we take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. And before I introduce our leaders, I'd just like to say on August the 17th of 1976, I came to my first OA meeting. So this is my 36th birthday with you folks. Thank you very much for that. I'd like you to please give a big round of applause for my dear friend and our first leader, Rex M. from San Diego.
My name is Rex, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And, I'd like to start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Well, let's see. I was born in New York City. I have two older brothers and a younger sister. And I can remember from an early age, my parents started locking up sugar stuff in the bedroom. So my dad would start locking up like cookies and stuff like that and whatever he had. So this was probably like 5, 6, 7 years old. At that age, when my dad would leave the door open of his bedroom, I would go in there and start stealing from a very young age. I would steal a couple cookies. I would steal stuff in wrappers. And I'd just take a few, you know. Later on, when I was like 10 years old, my mom started taking me to a dietitian. And at that age, I started to get some validation by what was being said on the scale. So I had a food plan with the dietitian, and when I would go there, I think I used to go on Fridays, and she would make me stand on that scale. She would either tell me that I was doing good or bad. And good meant a lower number, or not, she didn't say bad, but a number that she didn't think was right. She didn't tell me that I was good. So from a very early age, I started to realize that either I was a good person or a bad person by what the numbers said on the scale. Let me qualify real quick. I've had a top weight of 300 pounds and a low weight of like 165 in the last couple years. I've been in OA for 16 years. I currently have 5 years of abstinence. I'm not too sure my current weight, probably 180, something, 180. I don't weigh myself. I get weighed twice at the doctor's office, twice a year. Sometimes I don't look at the number. But my pants still fit, so that's good. Started going to dietitians when I was 10. Then from then on, I started doing other diets, like starvation or not eating, started walking and then running. And I'm also an exercise bulimic, or get rid of weight that way. I'm going to fast forward. I joined the military, and I went on a diet to join the military so I can meet the weight standard, and I barely got in. I think it was 22% body fat at the time. And so I barely squeaked in. That was after a diet, like for 4 months. So I started eating again. And in the military, I got something they call, I think, a PFT. We got weighed, and we had to do exercise twice a year. And every I was in the active duty for 7 years. So every 6 months, that dreadful time would come again where I had to get close to where I was supposed to be so I can maintain my job. Boy, so many diets. The non-eating, I remember going in the sauna for hours and not eating for 2 or 3 days before I got weighed. And I remember the person weighing me said, "You look really sick." Well, yeah, I haven't eaten in like a few days. I've been in the sauna for like a few hours, you know, and barely squeaking by. There was another time where I paid the person that measured me $20 and he passed me and he took the money. And what they did was if you didn't meet their weight, their height and weight, the next thing they do is measure you. So they put I don't know how they do the count, but they put a tape measure around your neck and run around your stomach, and then they come up with some numbers. And I learned some tricks. I remember how to squish my neck down like this, so my neck would be thicker, and then I would hold my stomach in, so the numbers would come out right. I remember them telling me, "You got to let your stomach out." I'm like, "It is out." You know, like I don't want to fail. You know, they have this policy in the Navy: 3 strikes and you're out. And so other times, I remember, you know, I would start making friends with these. They're called the PRT coordinators. And I would tell them that I want to pass like a month or two before, and they would see me really struggling. So they would say, if I was really close, they would always pass me. They would say, "Well, look at Rex. He lost like 15 pounds in the last month. Look at him. He's out there and he's trying. So let's pass him. Let's not jeopardize his job. He's a hard worker." So in the military, I'm also an alcoholic. And I have to, I'm going to talk some about alcohol because I've been sober for 16 years now. And I also started OA 16 years ago. But I only have 5 years of abstinence. In the military, I started drinking a lot. And after a 4th of July back in 96, I learned all these tricks, but one time I got in trouble for drinking, and I knew one of the, I forgot what the MPs, military police, one of them was my friend, so he threw the paperwork away, so I never got in trouble. But then another time, you know, I was showing up late to work. One time I put on my shirt backwards. I don't know how I did that. The button's inside out. But I was on time. No, I'm just kidding. So a lot of drinking in the military. I was stationed in Japan, Yokosuka. And I didn't drive there, so I would just drink almost every day. I think a lot of us were doing that, or at least I thought everybody was drinking then. So I got stationed up in Lemoore, California. And there, after a routine exam, the doctor asked me, "Do you have an alcohol problem?" And I said, "No." You know, I wasn't going to openly admit that I was an alcoholic or had some kind of alcohol problem because I can always, you know, always went to work. And he said, "Because your liver enzymes are very elevated and you're starting to have liver damage." And I was like, "I don't know." And so, it was the 5th of July in 96. The doctor said I had to go in for a routine exam or whatever. It was kind of weird because that wasn't my routine exam. He said I had to go in to do some lab work. So they took some lab work and they found me intoxicated during working hours. I guess everybody else knew that I was really drunk at work because, I would sleep somewhere, go hide and sleep. And so they took some blood tests, and he came out a little later and said, you're intoxicated during working hours. And I was like, "Oh, man, I'm in trouble now. They got me." You know. And he said, "Do you have a drinking problem?" I said, no. He says, well, you know, you're intoxicated during working hours, so you're going to be reprimanded. 60 days, no liberty, busted down and ranked. That means lower pay and half your pay for a month. And I was like, oh, man, that really, you know, that's not good news at all. He said, but I have an option for you. You can go to a rehab center for 6 weeks, an inpatient. And I remember asking, am I going to lose my pay and my rank? He said, no. I said, I'll go to the rehab. Smart man I am. So when I was in that rehab, it was, like I said, July, and it was in Miramar, San Diego. It used to be a naval station back then in 96. And I was wearing this jacket. See, I was wearing this foul weather jacket because my pants couldn't close because I was like 50 pounds overweight and my belt wouldn't close. But I was wearing the jacket because you couldn't tell. You know, and I remember people asking me, aren't you hot with that jacket? And I go, no. I have a cold or something. I would brush it off. They go, wow, it's really hot. You have the jacket on. But I couldn't close my pants, you know. And I wasn't about to order pants through the internet, you know, to get some special size for me. So when I was at that treatment center up in Miramar, luckily for me, one of the doctors there gave me one of those little forms. It's actually one of these.
I don't know if you guys have seen it before.
But it's the 15 questions. And this is how he diagnosed me as a compulsive overeater. It says, Do you eat when you're not hungry? I do that all the time. There's several other questions here. So I filled them out, and I think I've answered them all correctly. Because he said, your primary diagnosis is alcoholism. Your secondary is compulsive overeating. And I was like, okay, whatever. You know. So he said, so Monday through Friday, you're going to go. Part of the treatment was, we had a big group, small group, and then at nighttime, we had a white Navy. That's when the Navy had more money. We had vans. They used to drive us around to meetings. And so Monday through Friday, I went to AA meetings, and I did not really think I was an alcoholic. But now I know I am, but I didn't really identify too much with alcoholism. But I remember that Saturday came, and I went to my first OA meeting, and I felt such at home, you know. I heard somebody say that they're reaching for a French fry and wrecked their car. Well, I was reaching for a donut, and I wrecked my car. But I thought that was just an accident. I didn't put two and two together until somebody said that. I was actually reaching for, after having like four donuts or five donuts, reaching for another one, and then I hit a pole. That was an accident. That wasn't because of my addiction. I didn't think so, but... five donuts wasn't enough. But so that's where I first learned about Overeaters Anonymous. You know, I got to say I'm really lucky because in part of that 6 weeks inpatient up in Miramar, I got sent to a spiritual retreat, which was at the end. And at that retreat, I think I had my first spiritual experience, and that experience, hard to explain, but I just felt completely different. I just felt like I was looking at the world completely different. And I got struck sober then. You know, I asked God to remove my alcoholism, and it was gone. You know, I think God has a sense of humor. He says, you're going to have to work for OA. You know, but so I've never had a drink since. But I've had several relapses in OA. You know, and I'm a 100-pounder, so I've lost and gained 100 pounds a few times. The last time I went out, my dad died, and my relationship was breaking up. My 5-year girlfriend relationship was breaking up, and I was at the hospital with my dad. He's dying of leukemia, cancer, And I went down to the cafeteria, not thinking, you know. The cafeteria is closed, but there was a machine there where you put some coins in there. And I thought I made the best choice I could at the time. I wasn't even thinking about food or what was I eating or not eating, but I started eating some sugar. And then, I gained 85 pounds. Oh, and my girlfriend said, do you want to go out to that Friday meeting or do you still want to go out with me on Friday nights? And I was like, oh, I'll go out with you on Friday nights instead of go to the meetings. You know, so I let go of some commitments. And so I just wanted to share most of my story first and then get into the recovery. But I think I'm going to leave that for tomorrow. Other things I can say, I never went to my prom. I always thought that once I lost my weight, that all I had was a weight problem. I didn't really like going to the beach too much because I didn't want to take my shirt off. Probably had first sex in my 20s, early 20s. Never been married. I believe it's all attributed to this disease. I'm 51 years old now. Once I lose the weight, my life's going to start. But that wasn't really the case because I've lost the weight and nothing really changed until I started working the steps. I wanted to introduce Jim because that's all I have until tomorrow.
Thank you.
I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm Jim.
Hi, Jim.
And, thanks, John, for having me down. Thanks, Rex, for sharing this with me. And thank my sponsor, Spencer, for coming tonight and putting up with this. So thank you all. Glad to be here. I'm always glad to be in a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. It brings out an enthusiasm in me. And I'm an enthusiastic member of Overeaters Anonymous, I guess. I describe myself. Anyway, I think I haven't been to this retreat before, and it always brings up some character defects when they ask you to do something like this. And the first one is fear. Oh my God, I don't know if I could do this, and why did I say yes? And then, the low self-esteem, they're not going to accept me. Why are they asking me to do this? And then the third character defect that comes up is usually resentment. Well, piss on them, I'm not going to do it. And then to top it all off, I called my esteemed sponsor here, and I was going to share with him that I was going to participate in the retreat here. And so I asked him, I said, well, are you going to the retreat? And he says, no, I'm not going this year. He said, I heard they had a couple of idiots leading it. And I said, well, that does it. I'm not going either. And then I was thinking, hey, wait a minute. That's me he's talking about. So he explained to me tonight that he was trying to instill some humility in me before I came to the meeting. So thank you for that. Good to get down here to Santa Barbara and spend time with my sponsor. We had dinner tonight and so forth. So anyway, I guess I'll tell you my story as best I can. I always like to tell this little story before I start. A lot of things have to change here, and a lot of things have changed in my life as a result of this program and this beautiful thing we have here, this abstinence. A beautiful gift. And before I came to OA, I remember episodes. I usually was the kind of guy that ate in the evening. You know, I like to get a tray, and I could go through the day just fine. And then it would get to be about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the evening, and man, I would start eating. Sometimes I'd stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning. Tray after tray in a dark room with a TV, just eating, all alone. Two of my favorite things were Diet Coke and big bag of peanut M&Ms, in the hopes that one would cancel out the other. You get that, right?
That's it.
Before these eating episodes, I would go to the grocery store and I'd get the Diet Coke and the M&Ms and all the other stuff that I needed at home for supplies. And then I'd check out and I'd get home as quick as I could so I could eat my stuff. And so one day, a friend of mine went shopping with me. And so we're going through the market grabbing stuff, and I noticed that he's tearing this stuff open and eating it as he's going through the market. And I'm thinking to myself, is that legal? I said, how can you get away with that? I said, you're supposed to check out first, then you eat it. You don't eat it before you check. He says, no, they don't give a shit. He said, you just show them the empty bag or the label when you get to the checkout counter, and they don't even care. And I thought to myself, boy, isn't this a great country? And so that was some bad thinking I had that had to change. I was brought in or directed to OA by an AA sponsor who happened to be a physician. He was a medical doctor. He wasn't a compulsive overeater, but he noticed that I had a problem. And my 14th OA birthday was just passed here on July 24th. So he suggested that maybe I should go to OA. And I said, OA? I don't want to go to OA. I said, I don't belong in OA. I said, I know I can figure this out by myself without OA. And, of course, things got worse. I had a number of heart operations and developed onset diabetes as a result of this disease. And things are getting worse and life-threatening. So he suggested I go to OA. I come to you guys, and he kept bugging me. And finally, I decided, okay, I'm going to go. I'll go to the damn meeting, and I'll, just to make him happy. And of course, I went with a bad attitude, and I went to a men's breakfast stag meeting, and everybody was eating during the meeting. And I was confounded. I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I thought, my God, I'm sick, but I'm not as sick as these guys. And so I thought, this is a great excuse to report back to my sponsors that I don't fit in. I'm not as sick as you guys. So I went back to him and I said, I went to that meeting. I went to that OA meeting. And those guys are far sicker than I am. I mean, I know I've got a problem, but I'm nothing in that league. And he said, okay. He said, don't bring it. I'm not going to bring it up again. I'm not bringing it up again. I said, thank God. That's the end of that deal. And so, as I say, this being a progressive disease, my health continued to deteriorate as a result of it. And finally, I guess in desperation, he says, well, I told you I wouldn't bring this up again, but I'm gonna suggest one more time that you try Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm thinking to myself, I thought you weren't gonna bring it up again, but here I am faced with Overeaters Anonymous. And he said, I want to just add something if you're gonna do it. He said, this time, why don't you go back and try to change your attitude? Go back with a changed attitude. And I said, okay, I'll try it one more time. And so I went back to a meeting in Laguna Hills. And, before I walked in, I said, well, I'm going to change my attitude. I'm going to change my attitude. And matter of fact, in AA, he used to say, AA stands for altered attitudes, altered attitudes. So when I came to OA, I said, well, OA stands for overhauled attitudes. You guys overhauled my attitude. And so I came into this meeting, and I decided I was going to have a good attitude. I said hi to people, set up a few chairs. I don't remember exactly what I did. I knew what to do. I knew the routine. And so I thought, wow, this is a whole different experience. You know, I really fit in. I identified. And so I reported back to this old doctor that I had, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought, and I'm willing to give this thing a try. So he sponsored another fella by the name of Scott Redman. Scott's gone now. Some of you may have known him. And he suggested that Scott might be willing to sponsor me in OA. So I called Scott and I said, you know, Scott, I'm going to try this OA thing. I thought maybe you could be my sponsor. And he said, sure, I'll do that for you. And so he told me, we talked a little while, and he told me, now, he said, you call me before you do something. You call me before you do something. He said, don't call me after you do it, because I can't help you then. And I said, okay, I'll do that. Now, I'm looking at 70 years old right now, almost 70, so you can, 14, I was 14 years ago, I was still relatively old. I had been in this same pattern of compulsive overeating for as far back as I can remember in my life. So, my first day of abstinence, breakfast was fine, I called that in between, no problem. Lunch, fine, no problem. Called in at dinner, okay, no problem. Got to be about 7:30, then I had a problem. I got up and I headed into that kitchen like I'd always done. I'd always done all my life. I had no expectation that calling Scott would have any effect on it, deter me in the least. But I had committed to him that I would call him. I would call him before I did it. I had fully intended to do it, but I was going to call him, as he said, before I did it. So I had my phone with me. I was standing in the kitchen, called him up. Scott, this is Jim. I'm standing in the kitchen. I'm getting ready to do what I've always done, and I don't know what you could possibly say that would deter me from doing what I'm going to do. But I told you I'd call you. It's a very short conversation. He said, you better start praying. And that was the end of the conversation. And I'm standing in that kitchen. I think, praying? What the hell possible good is that going to do? And what does it have to do with my problem? But again, I was willing to take some direction from a sponsor. And so I couldn't think of any prayers except to say this. God, relieve me of this obsession to compulsively overeat. God, relieve me of this obsession to compulsively overeat. And I still say that many times to this day. I stood in that kitchen for 5 or 6 minutes, and I walked out of that kitchen, and I have been abstinent from that day to this. Now, I'd like to tell you, and I may have even thought at the time, oh, wow, I've had some kind of spiritual experience here. I've been struck abstinent. But it wasn't to be the case. That worked for one day only. It only worked for one day. That kept me abstinent that one day. But here's what I learned, and I'd like to share with you, is that I found in that moment not only the benefit of taking direction from somebody else, from a sponsor, but I discovered that I could tap into a higher power, the strength of a higher power, to relieve me of that obsession. I learned in one moment. And so from that day to this, I continued to expand on that thought. And Spencer and I were talking about it at dinner. The idea of sharing problems with my higher power rather than turning problems over to him and hoping he's going to fix them and give them back to me. That hasn't worked well for me. But the idea of engaging my higher power and sharing my problems with him works very well for me. I talked about, I was sharing with you about these character defects that came up as being asked to do this retreat. I can share that fear, that resentment, that low self-esteem, those character defects. I can come and share them with me and see what you think. And it seems to me that when I do that process, They get diminished, and I'm able to then go on and do things that I wouldn't normally be able to do. And so I that works so well for me. At a point in time, I thought, geez, I'm going to start sharing my meals with my higher power because it works well in other things. I don't know why it wouldn't work with that. So I had developed this process or this routine of asking my higher power to come and share the meal with me. Thank you for this wonderful spiritual abstinent meal you're giving me. Please come and join me. Be my guest. Be my partner. He's my partner. Come and share this experience of abstinence with me. So, and I don't, I go on to say, I don't need any more food than enough to nourish me so I can be of service to you. That's all I need. Come and be with me. And that process then turned into a spiritual exercise of sorts, okay? But, and then when it's over, thank you for coming and sharing this meal with me. And it takes all the fear, all the hanging on, all the white knuckling, it's all gone. That now becomes a very peaceful, serene undertaking, time I spend with my higher power. The threat of relapse is gone. It's just gone. That's all I can tell you. I do it every single meal. I do that every meal. I'm sharing my meals with my higher power. I don't know, how am I doing on time here? I don't know where.
Keep going?
Okay. So that's working. It's working really good. So I thought, well, gee, it's working so good with the meals. What about the in-betweens? Because that's when I'm not eating. And I thought, well, I'm going to engage him in the in-betweens as well. And so when I have problems, I'm able to, as I shared with you, invite him to share the problem with me as opposed to turning it over. And that just really works well for me. And I can get through just about any situation as long as I'm in that spiritual condition. Okay? So, getting back, I want to share this with you briefly. I don't know what I'm doing on time here. But anyway, I'm going to OA. I got this sponsor. I've developed a food plan. I've got an abstinence, a start of an abstinence going. I'm starting to feel a little better. I go back to the old doctor that directed me to you guys, and I said, I'm a little depressed here. I didn't have the food anymore. I told him I'm a little depressed, he's a doctor, see. So my idea was, well, I'm going to ask him to write me a little prescription for the depression. That was my idea. And so I went to him and I said, Paul, this depression has kind of set in since I've been going to OA and I'm abstinent and everything. And I thought perhaps you could write me a little prescription for that. And he would have no part of that at all. And he said, well, I used to be depressed too, and what I do to overcome depression is I exercise. And I suggest that you start exercising. And I'm thinking to myself, for Christ's sake, I'm not that depressed. But here again, I was willing to take direction from a sponsor. I was willing to do something contrary to what I thought should be done. So, at that point in time, best I could do was get up off the couch, get my dog, and walk around the block. And I was sweating. That's all I could do. That's the best I could do. I continued to do that. I got a partner that I lived by a high school, and there was a running track there. He was a runner, and so I'd go over there and I'd kind of walk around a little bit while he was running. Pretty soon he says, well, why don't you try to walk all the way around the track? And I said, well, I don't know if I could do that, And he said, well, try it and see. So sure enough, I walked a whole quarter mile to whatever that track was. And, I reported back to my sponsor, boy, I walked a quarter mile. I'm really proud of myself. I'm doing great here. I'm feeling better. And this goes on. And One day this guy says, you know, you've been coming over here walking, you've lost some weight, you're obviously feeling better. He says, why don't you try to run one lap? I said, no way. I said, no. I said, you don't understand. I've got heart problems. And my cardiologist would never, ever approve of me doing anything like that, like running. That would be out of the question. And he says, well, why don't you ask him? And I thought, okay, I will. I'll ask him. And my cardiologist is a guy named Craig Thomas from down in Orange County. He's been a friend of mine for years. And I went to him. I said, you know what, Greg? I said, I've got this. In the first place, I got this other old doctor that's encouraging me to do this exercise. And now I got this other guy that was asking me to try to run around the track. And I told him, I said, I know that you would never approve of anything like that. And he took a look at me and he says, you know, Jim, considering the condition you're in, anything is worth the risk. So, I'm a runner. What can I tell you? I started running. You know, I'm running. I've been running for 14 years. I started running, and I overcome these things. I don't really take any heart medications anymore. It's undetectable. I don't take any diabetes medications. That's also undetectable, although I am, you know, once you have it, just like the heart disease, it'll come back if you don't take care of yourself. But I'm in good, sound health today as a result of this program. So I'll wrap this up here. I'm doing this running. I'm getting up every morning at 5 o'clock, joining this guy, and we run, and pretty soon he has a change of schedule. His schedule gets changed, and so I'm left alone to do this running. Well, I'm not a great self-motivator. I need somebody to motivate me. And so I'm thinking, oh, my God, I lost my running partner. What am I going to do now? I'll never be able to do that. I'll never get up at 5 in the morning and do this. So I go back to my sponsor, and I said, Chris can't run with me anymore, and I don't know if I can do this alone. And he said, well, why don't you make that your 11th step time? That's when you do your 11th step. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll try it. And so I did. I'm doing and running. And so I get up and I ask my higher power to join me. Come and join me. Never missed a run in 14 years. And and it works wonderfully. Doing my 11th step. That's the every step we have here, by the way, I found takes some action. It can't be absorbed intellectually. It takes some action to make it work. And so that became my action to activate the 11th step. Okay, and so I found exercise and running and that kind of stuff so unpalatable that I decided to call it spiritual activity because it was part of my 11th step. And so that's all it is. It isn't anything separate. It's part and parcel of my 11th step. And so I went so far as to, I'm thinking, well, this 11th step thing really worked well. I'm going to ask my higher power to be my running partner. Now, I've never talked to him directly, but apparently he agreed because, like I say, I have never missed a run or an exercise in 14 years when I ask him to join me and give me the power to do it. And so that's how I share my 11th step with my higher power. I want to just finish with this. I was sharing with you how I share my meals with my higher power as part of my OA program. And that's kind of a third step deal, which we'll probably get into here as we get into the steps. But I'm thinking, I share my meals with my higher power. Well, I don't know if my higher power is a compulsive overeater, but I can tell you this. In 14 years, he has never missed a meal. Never missed a meal. And so I can report to you that that's accurate. Yeah, that's accurate. And so I continue to pursue the spiritual recovery program, and it works wonderfully. It's just been I'm just enthusiastic about OA. I love OA. I love this beautiful thing of abstinence that I've gotten through these 12 steps and doing the things that you suggested I do that I didn't always think were right for me. And so if you're new, you're coming back or something, give this thing a try. It's a wonderful, wonderful program, and I'm really happy to be here with you guys, and I'm sure we're going to have a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we take a 5-minute break and come back a little around 9 o'clock? Everybody's been sitting down for a while, and then we'll let you share. We want to hear from all of you. Okay?